Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Procrastination may be the thief of time, but it sure gets you some good steals at the mall. Holiday shoppers delayed longer than ever this year. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Siemens, from generators that power cities to light bulbs for homes, from factory automation to medical diagnostics. Siemens 70,000 U.S. employees providing solutions for America. And by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Amy Scott, sitting in for Kai Rizdahl. We'll get around to those procrastinating shoppers in a moment. But first, Merrill Lynch got an early Christmas present today in the form of a multi-billion dollar cash infusion. The investment bank, as you know, has been through a bit of a rough patch lately. Merrill lost more than $2 billion last quarter on bad subprime mortgage investments. Today, some big investors stepped forward with a little help. Marketplace's Jill Barshay has more from New York.
Merrill Lynch said today it's getting more than $6 billion for selling a 15% stake in itself. Most of the money is coming from Temasek. That's an investment arm for the government of Singapore. And Arizona group Davis Advisors is kicking in about $1 billion of it, too. Benjamin Wallace is a securities analyst at Grimes & Company in Massachusetts. Grimes owns shares in Merrill. He says the Davis group is kind of like Warren Buffett. They hold on to investments for a long time.
You know, it's good to see them being involved in this beyond just another sovereign wealth fund stepping up.
Wallace says Merrill was desperate to come up with cash to cover its subprime mortgage losses. It's selling shares to the Singapore and Davis investors at a big discount of about 10% a share.
You know, I guess what beggars can't be choosers is it's issuing stock at a price you'd probably rather not issue it, which they're doing with this deal.
Merrill is also selling one of its corporate lending divisions to General Electric. John Oliver is a spokesman for the buyer, GE Capital.
They were getting about $15 billion worth of really, really good loans. We're not getting anywhere near the subprime stuff.
The markets rose today. They liked Merrill's new cash. Grimes & Company's Wallace says the more cash that Merrill and other big banks raise, the sooner they'll be able to start lending it out again. And that's an important step in relieving the credit crunch. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay for Marketplace.
The new CEO of Merrill Lynch, John Thain, used to work over at Goldman Sachs, and today he might wish he'd stayed there. Goldman defied the competition this year by turning in record profits, and there's word today CEO Lloyd Blankfein will be paid richly for it. Blankfein's bonus for 2007, get this, a whopping $67.9 million. That's about $18,000 an hour, if you're wondering. And passengers on MaxJet Airways are stuck trying to hitch a ride with Santa tonight. Earlier today, the airline built for business class filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, leaving some passengers stranded on Christmas Eve. Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look at what sent the airline into freefall.
You've reached MaxJet Airways. A representative will be with you shortly.
They're still answering the phone at MaxJet. The airline wouldn't give an interview, but has an apology on its website. Aviation analyst Richard Abelofia says high fuel prices and stiff competition grounded the airline.
Business travelers aren't just paying for a nice seat and a good meal. They're also paying for the ability to fly when they want to fly. And that means if you can offer two or three flights a day, you have a strong advantage there.
American Airlines went head-to-head with MaxJet. 2 months ago, it started service from JFK to London's Stansted Airport. MaxJet took a nosedive when it couldn't get a loan. Now the airline is spending what money it has helping passengers. The soothing voice at its toll-free number promises full refunds and...
Started your travels with us. MaxJet is working to secure alternative flight accommodations.
MaxJet says it's also prepaid for 450 hotel rooms. But why bother if you're going out of business? University of Portland finance professor Richard Gritta says MaxJet may try to reorganize and needs loyal passengers.
That may be their motive, is to try and get these people back so that, you know, look, yeah, we filed because we had to, but we're trying to get you home. And if we reorganize, we want you to remember that we did the best we could for you.
But Gritta says it would be awfully hard for MaxJet to raise new cash in the current credit crunch. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Chances are some of you are out there listening to this as you pull out of a shopping mall parking lot, or maybe even into one. Call it last minute, or maybe just thrifty. From Boston, Jeremy Hobson reports.
Outside Boston's upscale Copley Place Mall, shoppers are shuffling out to waiting cabs, their hands full of bulging shopping bags. Many say they have no time to talk to me. Some waited till the bitter end in the hopes of finding last-minute deals.
I just bought a very expensive item for about 50%, yeah.
This phenomenon is nothing new, says Boston College professor Kathleen Siders, but she says it's a growing trend.
We're lazier, we're busier, and we have less money to spend.
She says the growing popularity of gift cards is also allowing shoppers to wait. The numbers indicate many are pushing things right down to the wire. A survey from the American Research Group found just 71% of Americans had completed their Christmas shopping as of yesterday, down from a typical 85%. All the last-minute purchasing means Bill Martin of ShopperTrack doesn't have a final read on the season just yet, but he is predicting 3.6% growth over last year.
Well, I think it's a good year, not a great year.
Martin and Siders agree when it comes to procrastinators, there is one group in particular that keeps retailers biting their fingernails right up to the last minute. Men, like this guy, who says he shops last minute every year and always finds good deals.
25 to 40% off pretty much everywhere I went.
So you keep up the tradition next year.
Will do.
In Boston, and heading out to get one last thing, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Those brick-and-mortar retailers can pin some of the blame on the internet for keeping shoppers away. Online spending from November 1st through last Friday increased 19% from a year ago. That's actually the slowest pace since research firm Comscore started tracking these things 5 years ago. Analysts blame high gas and food prices, the housing slump, you know, the usual suspects. But still, jingle bells all the way on the markets today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It's been said a few times that necessity is the mother of invention. When your bank account runs low, you brainstorm. Some people even pray. One group of entrepreneurs did both, and they hit it big with two words, laser monks. No, it's not a Christian Star Wars spinoff. It's a fairly successful web business run by Cistercian monks in Wisconsin. The monks developed a business reselling ink and toner cartridges for printers at a discount. They pay off their bills, and the rest goes to charitable causes around the world. Sarah Caniglia wrote a book about her experiences helping the laser monks run their website. Sarah, how did all this get started?
About 5 years ago, Father Bernard McCoy, who is the prior of the abbey, needed a toner cartridge for his printer. And he went online to look for what he calls black powder, because that's basically what it is. He realized at that point that if a toner cartridge was expensive for his monastery, think of all the other nonprofit groups and churches and schools and businesses that were overpaying for these products. And he came up with this business, Laser Monks, and that's how it all began. It's actually sort of, we call it divine printervention.
So in your book, you talk about the rule of Saint Benedict. First of all, who was Saint Benedict, and how does this rule apply to business?
Saint Benedict is a gentleman who came up with a rule for monastic living. He talks about ora et labora, balancing prayer and work, and we try to use the rule in a business way, sort of in layman's terms, and we treat all of our customers with the utmost care and respect and hospitality.
Well, you tell one story in the book about a woman who called complaining that one of your ink cartridges was stuck in her printer, and I guess it was unclear that this was even one of your cartridges, but you have to admit your response to this woman was pretty unusual.
You know, not that long ago, about a year or so ago, a woman called in. She was beside herself. She was very irate. She had purchased cartridges, I found by looking at her order history, about 2 years previously, and she was complaining that our cartridges totally ruined her printer. Well, number one, I had gleaned from the conversation that she had purchased other cartridges from other companies in that 2 years. But I also knew that, trying to think about what St. Benedict would do in this case, we wanted to solve the woman's problem. And so what I did while we were on the phone, I went online to a printer website. I found her printer, and I actually found an upgraded model of that printer. And at the same time we were talking, I purchased the printer for her. I had it shipped overnight at no charge.
And so how much did that printer cost you?
About $200. Very small price to pay to make someone happy. And remember this, too. It's not only a win-win for the people that are in need and for our business, but it's also great marketing.
So what kind of response have you had from customers?
We've had a wonderful, overwhelming response. And part of this, I think, is that because we work for Monks, innately people trust us. We've had people that have called in that have wanted to pray with us before they place the order. We have a customer, and his name is God, and that's what's on his credit card, and he's been ordering from us, and at first we didn't believe it, but that's truly his name. And what other companies get customers called God? So,
well, I was going to ask, I mean, are most of your customers religious? I assume God is.
I would think God is. You know, that I really don't know. We like to say we sell non-denominational ink, so that we're selling to all sorts of people, you know, not just Catholics, not just Catholic schools, but we sell to all sorts of businesses, corporate businesses, small businesses, many nonprofits, many, many schools. So it's pretty much across the board.
Well, we've seen recently a proliferation of socially conscious businesses. Are customers the ones pushing for this?
I think people are ready to return back to civic responsibility. But I also think you want to train, what we wanted to do is train our customer base so that they expect to purchase from companies where they're purchasing with a purpose. We're training our customers little by little to expect that in all the products and services that they buy.
Sarah Caniglia is a founder of Monk Helper Marketing and co-author of Laser Monks, the business story 900 years in the making. Sarah, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you very much. Many blessings and a happy holiday to you.
We've been following the collapse of Zimbabwe's economy. Right now, Zimbabweans are lining up at banks, desperate to exchange their currency before it becomes worthless on December 31st. Some might argue that's already happened. The inflation rate is an estimated 40,000%. Though Zimbabwe says it can't give an official figure, there aren't enough goods left in the shops to make price comparisons. About 80% of the workforce is unemployed, and thousands of Zimbabweans cross into South Africa illegally to find work. As Gretchen Wilson reports from the South African border, many children make that journey by themselves.
The sun's just coming up over this small town. Semi-trucks drive through Main Street, coming from Zimbabwe's border. And in the gray light, you can see people on street corners, leaning over garbage cans. They're picking through the trash. These are undocumented migrants from Zimbabwe, and they're as skittish as stray cats. As they stand up, you can see they're actually children. One is a boy I'll call Zach, whose shorts and filthy red t-shirt hang on his frame. He's 13.
We're looking man for food if you will not get a job. I'm looking for a job and man for school. I don't have parents. My parents are dead.
In Zimbabwe, poverty, hunger, and AIDS have broken down family economies. Children with no other options come to South Africa on their own, in search of day labor and handouts. In Zach's case, he could no longer afford school fees, so for 3 weeks, he walked from his hometown in Zimbabwe, through the bush, and across the shallow Limpopo River into South Africa. He wasn't alone.
I come with my friends.
How old are they?
That's 9 years, 13, 14.
Every morning, Zach roams parking lots here. He quietly asks strangers if he can weed and water their gardens.
How do you ask people for a job?
You say, I'm looking for a job. Then if you say I don't have, I beg you, man, for food.
An estimated 1,500 children like Zach cross this border every year. Sarah Crow is with UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund. She says children come for the same reason adults do, food and money.
Well, South Africa is the powerhouse of Africa. And with economic degradation in countries around the region, such as Zimbabwe, South Africa is a very attractive place to come.
But once they're here, they're extremely vulnerable. They dodge border officials, criminal gangs, child predators, and traffickers. Girls are particularly vulnerable to rape and forced prostitution. South African officials routinely deport Zimbabwean adults, but authorities lack the capacity to deal with most of the children, so they're left to roam. At noon, a 17-year-old I'll call Michael walks from a row of shacks and into town. His parents asked him to leave Zimbabwe a few months ago to become a breadwinner.
When I came here to South Africa, I was thinking that I'm going to find some jobs and work for my family, for my father, but I didn't find work.
He still hopes to become a farm worker here, making $140 a month picking oranges. Meanwhile, he worries for his family.
Because I don't know what they're doing now. I don't know whether they've got food. I don't know.
The sun's going down over South Africa's main border crossing into Zimbabwe. People here are hustling, selling food and gas to those about to cross the border. Kids are here too, hunting for bottles. Children collect plastic bottles from the trash that lines the road. Most adults won't get across the border post without proper documentation. But when kids ask to cross, officials often look the other way. How do you get across the border?
In the bridge. He said, the soldier, I want to go to big bottle.
And the soldier lets you come across?
Yes.
These are the youngest migrants, 8 and 9 years old. They're crossing international borders and exposing themselves to high risk just to collect plastic bottles they'll sell for a penny apiece in Zimbabwe. At the border between Zimbabwe and South Africa, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Coming up, churches hope to heat up the offering with hallelujahs instead of hellfire.
If you yell at people, they get angry and don't want to do anything. You have to be gentle and cajoling.
But first, let's do the numbers. That hefty investment in Merrill Lynch we told you about and a rosier credit outlook boosted stocks today on Wall Street in a shortened session. The Dow Jones Industrial Average moved up 0.75% or 98 points to close at 13,549. The NASDAQ rose 0.8% or 21 points to close at 2713. The S&P 500 picked up 0.8% or 11 points to end the day at 1496. Target unwrapped a 3.5% gain after investor William Ackman announced that his hedge fund, Pershing Square Capital Management, will increase its stake in the retailer. Investors started out bullish for Merrill Lynch, but the financial giant couldn't hold on to its earlier gains. Its shares ended the day almost 3% lower. And Hess Corporation bubbled up almost 4.5% as the price of crude oil climbed to more than $94 a barrel. Overseas, markets were up. Britain's FTSE kicked up 0.7%. France's CAC 40 picked up 0.2%. Germany's DAX rocketed 1.7%. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.21. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Each song we choose for the rundown on Marketplace is there for a reason. If you hear one that resonates, you can find out what it is on our website. Head to marketplace.org and check out the songs on the right side of the screen. There's also a link to an online store where you can buy each song.
From
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Tuesday. Markets are closed in observance of the holiday. No trading. Go do something else. President Bush is at Camp David for some downtime. And on December 25th, 1997, Christmas was celebrated in Cuba after a 28-year hiatus. The government granted the holiday in honor of an upcoming visit from the Pope. Christmas was permanently reinstated the following year. I'm Michelle Phillippe. Merry Christmas.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. One industry enjoying strong holiday sales is the movie business. Box office receipts over the weekend jumped 36% over this time last year. Among the films opening this week is There Will Be Blood. Daniel Day-Lewis stars as a wildcat oil driller in this loose adaptation of an Upton Sinclair novel. Commentator John Brady says the film offers a look at some uniquely American themes.
Are you a member of the Junior League of American Entrepreneurs? Well on your way to acquiring your first 100 mil? Here's some advice. Go see Paul Thomas Anderson's stunning new film, There Will Be Blood. It'll put some things into perspective. There Will Be Blood is set during California's rough and tumble oil boom. In the teens and 20s of last century, California was all about oil. The state was the world's Saudi Arabia. 70% of global crude flowed out of Golden State ground. Daniel Plainview, portrayed with concentrated flintiness by Daniel Day-Lewis, is the focus of There Will Be Blood. At the outset, Plainview's just a small-time prospector looking to get his share of this black gold. Through sheer force of will and some well-timed moments of lying and cheating, he strikes it rich. But the road to hell is paved with oil leases. By film's end, Plainview is a broken man. Rest assured, there is blood. Thankfully, Plainview is more than the Screenland cliché of the self-destructive tycoon. He's a complex, stewing mix of drive, expertise, cunning, rough affection, and violence. He's mean as spit, but capable of sudden bursts of warmth as well. He fascinates and repels. Anderson also expresses some compelling symbolism. Plainview is bedeviled by a rival, Eli Sunday. Sunday is a fire and brimstone preacher in the same town where Plainview finds his gusher. Plainview wants oil. Eli Sunday wants souls. They really, really dislike each other. But this is more than a fight between two men. This is a fight between two primal forces of American life, business and religion. Don't expect a pat resolution to this struggle. The dark, unsettling side of our country's enduring preoccupation with profit and salvation haunts this film. Anderson trusts his audience to grapple with his bleak vision. An excellent, challenging film is the result.
John Brady lives here in Los Angeles, where he writes about popular culture. If you've seen anything good or bad at the Cineplex lately, drop us a line. Go to marketplace.org and click on Contact. Retailers aren't the only ones counting on the Christmas rush. December is high season for church going. And while year-end isn't exactly make-or-break time for churches the way it is for stores, it is a key time to fill up those coffers. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Tonight, pews all over America will be bursting with churchgoers eager to feel the Christmas spirit. Here in Manhattan, St. Patrick's Cathedral will be particularly busy. New York's Catholic Archdiocese says congregations everywhere tend to swell to twice the usual size at this time of year, and that means a lot more money in the collection plate. The Episcopalians say the same thing. Father Jerry Kucher heads finance and operations for the Episcopal Diocese of New York. He says Christmas collection plate offerings make up about 3% of the year's operating budget. Still,
the church has not that many big impulse shoppers. The church has a very brand loyal customer base that pays all year long.
In other words, parishioners who pledge. They fill out a card stating the amount they'll give the church the following year. Some send weekly checks, others pay monthly or quarterly. Like businessman Jay Bowman, visiting St. Patrick's Cathedral one recent afternoon. He says he's a man of regular habits.
We do contribute a little bit extra at the holidays, at Christmas, but generally do so throughout the year.
But sometimes people get behind. Clifford Harkness is treasurer of Christ Church, an Episcopal church in South Brooklyn. He says December is when he finds himself chasing people up for money they've pledged but haven't yet given.
I do the best I can, but there's a limit to what you can do. If you yell at people, they get angry and don't want to do anything. You have to be gentle and cajoling.
Harkness says by year's end, he receives virtually all the money he's been expecting. Money he needs to help pay for everything from the church's utility bills and the priest's salary to Christmas decorations. Father Kucha says it's a tricky business bugging people for money because there's no obligation to give.
These are voluntary gifts. They are not legal contracts. They are good faith estimates of what the person thought they wanted to do at the beginning of the year.
If someone doesn't fulfill their pledge, he says, it's often because they're unhappy with something their church is doing, or they're having financial difficulties. On a cold, clear day last week, most visitors to St. Patrick's didn't look like they were having too many financial problems. Shoppers laden with bags moved easily between the cathedral's foyer and the sidewalks of Fifth Avenue.
I'm a tourist, I'm sorry.
We live in Jersey.
We're a bunch of heathens who live there.
Stores are hoping for more of that type of weather to keep shoppers coming. The church has similar hopes. Father Jerry Kucher of New York's Episcopal Diocese.
So while many people like white Christmases, most clergy don't want it to be very, very white. A little dusting would be okay, but not something that would keep people home.
He says Christmas is a wonderful time to offer spiritual succor to the many and to end the year in the black. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a well-thought-out allocation strategy can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note, though it flows freely from the spring, for most of us, water isn't free. And in fact, it's getting more expensive by about a nickel in Chicago. The Windy City is set to impose a 5-cent tax on bottled water come the new year, according to the Chicago Tribune. It's the first major city to do so. Officials hope the extra cash will help fill a gap in the city's budget. Could help. Bets are the tax will bring in about $10 million each year. And one more change affecting car dealers who sell Subarus. The slide in the dollar has spurred a lot of Canadians across the border to the U.S. to shop for cars. But as of January 3rd, under a Subaru of America policy, cars bought here and then registered in Canada will no longer go to the dealer's bonus payments. Oh, well, it was sweet while it lasted. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 98 points, or 0.75%. The Nasdaq climbed 21 points, or 0.8%. And the S&P 500 ambled up 11 points, also 0.8% there. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Jennifer Collins, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time, you've got a busy day ahead of you, pies to bake and dinner to cook. Sounds like the recipe for a perfect ad campaign.
Honestly, with a little Crisco in your frying pan, you can have supper on the table in a jiffy.
I'm Amy Scott. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.